Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into a world where corporate treasuries, normally the most conservative part of a company, are making some really bold, even aggressive moves. It's not just the usual suspects, the tech giants. It's this fascinating, pretty significant shift in how companies manage their money, specifically with Bitcoin. This deep dive is actually part two of our look at corporate Bitcoin treasuries. Part one was all about why companies first added Bitcoin, as a hedge, maybe diversification. Today, we're exploring what happens when that treasury allocation doesn't just grow, but it actually becomes the entire strategy for the business.
That's exactly right. Our mission here is to really unpack how Bitcoin can go from just being, an asset on the balance sheet to forming part, maybe even the whole, of a business model. We'll look at the innovative financing methods they're using, the big risks that get amplified, and the potential for some really outsized returns, especially if you were an early mover. By the end, you should have a pretty comprehensive picture of the different approaches companies are taking, and maybe most importantly, the critical assumptions these very aggressive strategies rely on.
Okay, so quick recap from part one then. We saw companies initially buying Bitcoin as a sort of measured allocation.
Yeah, defensive mostly.
Right, a hedge against inflation, diversification, maybe signaling their forward thinking. The generally conservative, limited size, about 170 companies, public and private.
But things have really moved on. Not everyone's playing defense anymore. A much more ambitious, much more aggressive strategy has popped up, led really by companies like Strategy used to be MicroStrategy. These firms are using some genuinely innovative financing, tapping into debt markets to essentially supercharge their Bitcoin buying.
Supercharge. I like that. So the core idea here is that Bitcoin isn't just part of the balance sheet.
No, not at all.
It becomes part, maybe even the whole business model. The treasury turns into a kind of...
a capital engine. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Turning capital into a direct bet on where Bitcoin's going, the potential returns. Way beyond what their normal operations might bring in. But, and this is a big but, while these strategies do offer that chance for huge returns, especially for the first ones in, they also massively amplify the risk. And as those first mover advantages fade, we're seeing more companies jump in. Sometimes, frankly, it looks like a distraction from core businesses that are struggling. And all this growing leverage, it risks repeating those boom and bust cycles we saw with retail investors.
Yeah.
Only now, it's potentially at a corporate scale.
So the nuance here is really important. It's not all the same thing.
No, not at all.
The way companies integrate Bitcoin varies hugely, from like low-risk hedging all the way to completely rewiring their capital stack. Just lumping them all together misses a lot.
Absolutely. You miss the differences in risk, the reasons they're doing it, the methods, even how they report it. So if you think about it like a spectrum, on one end, you've got companies with little or no Bitcoin. On the other, you have the all-in crowd. We can probably break it down into three main types. First, the passive allocators. Mm. These are your traditional firms. They put a small slice of their treasury into Bitcoin, maybe a hedge, diversification, very conservative, low risk, low reward. That's mostly what we talked about in part one.
Okay, standard treasury stuff, just with a bit of Bitcoin.
Exactly. Then you have the integrated accumulators. These guys go a bit further. They actively pile up Bitcoin over time, maybe reinvesting surplus cash, or if they're miners, they hold onto the coins they mine instead of selling right away. Their conviction is deeper, definitely, but it's still kind of grounded in their normal treasury operations, supporting the main business, keeping liquid.
Got it. Still linked to the core business.
Right. And then category three, the Bitcoin-centric strategies. These are the most aggressive ones. They fundamentally rewire their whole capital structure. The mix of debt and equity they use, specifically to accumulate Bitcoin. They'll issue new shares, use convertible debt, build up this narrative momentum, all tools to get more Bitcoin per share. Their goal is pure outperformance, not just preserving capital.
Yeah.
Their belief in Bitcoin's long-term future is, absolute, to the point where the traditional treasury job is basically thrown out. Asset accumulation is the goal. The treasury is the business model.
And the prime example of this, the company that really blazed this trail.
That's Strategy, right?
Oh, absolutely, Strategy. They were, and technically still are, a software firm. But that part of the business barely generates cash flow anymore. In August 2020, the CEO, Michael Saylor, just pivoted the whole thing into a Bitcoin accumulation machine. As of June 2025, get this, they hold 592,000 Bitcoin, worth about $62 billion.
Wow. 592,000. How does that compare?
Well, the next biggest corporate holder MRA has only 49,000, so it's a huge difference.
And the market reaction?
Rewarded it massively. Strategy's market cap now, $103 billion. It's a huge premium over the actual Bitcoin they hold. Share price is up to $372. It's almost a 3,000% jump since 2020.
Okay, let's unpack this. This market premium, that seems to be the absolute key here, doesn't it? How does that premium actually fuel what they're doing?
It absolutely is key. That premium, the market value being higher than the Bitcoin value, it creates this sort of market inefficiency, and that allows what people call the positive flywheel to spin.
Positive flywheel, yeah. It lets Strategy leverage Bitcoin's fixed supply, the growing demand, rising prices, all that leads to these valuation premiums, which in turn lets them raise more money to buy even more Bitcoin. It feeds itself.
Right. The market's basically saying, yes, we like this, have some cheap capital, but how do they fund it? It can't just be software revenue, surely.
Oh, not even close. And their success has definitely inspired copycats, but Strategy's capital structuring is really quite sophisticated. Take their latest debt raise, February 2025, $2 billion. Convertible notes, 0% interest, due in 2030.
0%. So they just got $2 billion.
Pretty much. They got $2 billion to buy more Bitcoin, and they only have to repay the principal. Now, those notes can convert to equity later, which should dilute shareholders.
Right, the convertible part.
But for now, it's incredibly cheap capital.
Yeah.
And that ability to raise money so cheaply, that's been a huge competitive edge. Newer players would really struggle to get terms like that. And part of that advantage comes from their history, their track record, and their willingness to double down when the market tanks. Remember the big crash, 2021 to 2022? Bitcoin dropped 76%.
Yeah, brutal.
Strategy didn't sell. They kept issuing equity, kept issuing debt, and bought more Bitcoin at those lower prices. That really strengthened their story, their narrative of resilience and long-term belief.
It's pretty incredible stuff. So what does this mean for investors then? Should people just buy Strategy shares instead of Bitcoin itself? It sounds simpler maybe?
Well, that's a really debated point, highly contentious. That premium Strategy commands, it reflects a mix of things. Being first, that powerful narrative, the cheap financing, the track record of riding out storms. Critics just say, look, it adds counterparty risk. Why not just buy Bitcoin directly? But supporters see it differently. Maybe as a useful proxy for Bitcoin, especially for big institutions that face restrictions on holding crypto directly. Or maybe it's a bet on Saylor himself, the charismatic CEO, and his financial team.
So a bet on management and execution, too.
Exactly. The problem is, as more companies try to copy this playbook, the line gets blurry. Is it a smart investment or just speculation dressed up to look legitimate? And that brings us neatly to the critical assumptions these really aggressive strategies are built on. You know, the early birds like Strategy had this unique mixed conviction, financial smarts, maybe some regulatory leeway.
Taking advantage of gaps, maybe?
Perhaps. But as more players adopt the same script, well, the novelty wears off.
So with such an aggressive play, they must be making some pretty big assumptions. What's the first one we need to look at?
I think the first big one is assuming that these narrative-driven premium valuations will just keep going. The market might just be less excited, less willing to slab a big premium on the 10th or the 20th company doing the exact same thing.
Right, the story gets old, commoditized.
Precisely. At some point, the market just goes, yeah, heard that one before.
Okay, what about the money side? The financing. Can everyone keep doing this? Is that sustainable?
Good question. That leads to assumption number two, that the increased leverage and maybe reduced market liquidity are sustainable. See, to actually beat Bitcoin's performance, not just track it, these companies have to add leverage.
Through things like convertible debt.
Yeah, convertible debt, preferred equity, maybe issuing shares directly into the market at the market offerings. But Bitcoin is volatile. We all know that. And as more coins get locked up in these corporate treasuries, the actual trading liquidity, the market depth, might shrink.
Making it harder to buy or sell large amounts without moving the price.
Exactly. And as new companies jump in and struggle to stand out, what do? They turn to more leverage, and that creates this reflexive system.
You mentioned that earlier, reflexive, like a feedback loop.
Exactly. Rising prices fuel more buying, pushing prices higher, but it works both ways. A significant downturn. That triggers dilution from convertibles, forced selling to meet debt obligations, maybe even insolvency.
Which raises another point. Is everyone doing this because they truly believe in Bitcoin long term? Or are some just, you know, jumping on the bandwagon, maybe out of desperation?
And that's assumption number three.
Yeah.
That all these new entrants actually have deep conviction. The truth is, probably not. Some companies jumping in might be businesses that were already struggling, and they see this as a trendy narrative to get some excitement back.
A Hail Mary, almost.
Could be. Others might just lack the experience, the governance maturity to handle these complex financial instruments, especially when the underlying asset bounces around like Bitcoin does. They might also be getting in right near the top of a cycle.
And in a downturn.
The weak hands get shaken out. They're forced to sell, turning normal volatility into a potential cascade, a downward spiral. So you put those three assumptions together: persistent premiums, sustainable leverage, universal conviction, and you get a pretty fragile setup. Potentially dangerous.
Right.
This whole new wave of corporate Bitcoin adoption, it really risks just repeating the same boom-bust cycles we saw retail investors go through over the last decade. Only this time, it's happening at an institutional level.
FOMO, leverage, maybe not fully understanding the risks.
Yeah, it's a recipe for potential instability.
So, boiling it down for someone listening, an investor perhaps, what's the big takeaway from all this risk?
I think the lesson from the retail crypto world is crystal clear. Counterparty risk is real.
Explain that quickly, counterparty risk.
It's simply the risk that the other side in a deal or the platform you're using won't hold up their end. Think Mt. Gox back in 2014 or FTX more recently in 2022.
Right, exchanges collapsing.
Exactly. When those platforms went down, people who didn't hold their own Bitcoin directly, they were wiped out, gone. Now, today, we have much better institutional custody options. Regulated ETFs are here. Proper derivatives markets. So the argument for taking on the extra governance risk, the execution risk of investing in one of these Bitcoin treasury companies, it gets weaker unless that company offers something truly unique, some financial or operational edge. Oh. You just can't get buying Bitcoin directly or via an ETF.
Okay, so the landscape for how to get exposure is changing too. Let's game this out a bit. Imagine the future. What are some potential scenarios for these Bitcoin heavy companies if the market turns or even if it keeps going up?
Yeah, scenario planning is crucial here. We have to remember, Bitcoin is still highly volatile. Historically, it's had these massive drawdowns, 80% or more, before recovering. And the arrival of institutions, these aggressive treasury strategies using leverage, that might actually amplify the volatility by reducing free-floating supply and adding all that debt. Just for context, as of, say, July 2025, Bitcoin's hovering around $120,000. A report from June said 61 corporate treasuries hold about 3.2% of all Bitcoin, and half of those companies bought in at average prices above $90,000.
So they're currently well in profit, most of them.
Right. For now, 58 out of those 61 are trading at a premium to their Bitcoin holdings. But what happens if the price goes flat or drops? Well, one scenario is corporate carnage. If Bitcoin falls below, say, $70,000, many of these treasuries might hit trigger points, margin calls, debt covenants. They could be forced to start selling Bitcoin.
Which pushes the price down further.
Exactly. A potential cascade effect. Sell-offs creating more downward pressure, forcing more selling. Another scenario, discipline survival. Maybe we get a bear market, but it's relatively short. That would likely shake out the companies with less conviction, the ones who over-leveraged.
Weak hands again.
Right. The ones left standing, those with stronger balance sheets, better debt structures. They'd probably use the dip to buy more Bitcoin cheaply, positioning for the eventual recovery. We'd end up with fewer, but maybe higher quality treasury companies. Then there's the really grim scenario.
Yeah.
Longer lived crypto winter. Imagine Bitcoin crashes, maybe loses 90% of its value and stays down there for 4 or 5 years.
Ouch.
Even Michael Saylor at Strategy admits that in that scenario, their equity holders would likely be completely wiped out. The leverage just wouldn't hold.
Okay, that's the downside. What about the flip side, the optimistic view? What if Bitcoin keeps climbing or has a sustained run up?
Well, obviously, a sustained price increase would massively reward these Bitcoin-centric firms and their shareholders. That asymmetric exposure they've built up would deliver huge gains. Their leveraged shares would likely become highly sought-after proxies for Bitcoin itself. The first movers, the ones with real conviction, discipline, smart capital structures, they'd see the biggest rewards. Michael Saylor's own sort of, well, not exactly bear case, but his long-term view sees Bitcoin potentially hitting $3 million by 2045.
$3 million.
However, and there's always a however, even if Bitcoin prices keep rising, those market inefficiencies, those premiums, they're likely to shrink over time.
Why is that?
As regulations clear up, as direct access through ETFs and other products becomes easier, as derivatives markets get deeper, more investors will probably just choose to hold Bitcoin directly or through simpler vehicles. The narrative driving those premiums might fade.
So the special advantage disappears.
It could. And if that happens, the ability to raise super cheap capital also dries up. companies sticking with the strategy then start to look maybe just over-leveraged, overly exposed to downside risk, or possibly even like they're using Bitcoin to mask problems in their original business. And consider this, just one big high-profile collapse, maybe an over-leveraged treasury company, or one with poor governance that blows up, that could trigger contagion. Investors might panic and pull out of all but the absolute most trusted treasury firms just to avoid that unnecessary counterparty risk.
So it's very reflexive, as you said. The model feeds on itself on the way up.
But it absolutely works in reverse, too, making any downturn much worse. And as more companies pile in, often with a lot of leverage and maybe questionable conviction, the extreme outcomes, both good and bad, just become more likely.
Okay, so wrapping this up, these really aggressive Bitcoin treasury strategies, they can work, but it sounds like only under very specific conditions.
That's a good summary. Yeah, they rely heavily on that reflexive momentum, needing deep pockets or easy access to capital, and fundamentally on the belief that markets will keep rewarding them for just holding Bitcoin. But in doing so, they introduce this layer of fragility, maybe hidden under the banner of innovation. They offer you leveraged exposure, sure, but they also bring back that counterparty risk Bitcoin was partly designed to eliminate. And we've seen this story before in Bitcoin's history, haven't we? Decentralization doesn't stop bubbles forming. And centralized points of failure exchanges, maybe now these treasuries, they can have a massive impact on sentiment and price.
Only this time, it's corporate balance sheets chasing the narrative, not just individual retail investors.
Exactly.
So a final thought then for you listening as you watch this all unfold. Whether these specific Bitcoin treasury companies get it right or wrong in the long run, Bitcoin, crypto, blockchain, tech, it seems undeniable they're here to stay. They're weaving themselves into the financial mainstream. Maybe the biggest winners won't be the ones just chasing these headlines, these treasury strategies. Perhaps it'll be the ones focused on the second and third order effects. You know, the infrastructure builders, the enablers, the ones selling the picks and shovels in this digital gold rush. Definitely something to think about as this fascinating space keeps evolving.